You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
So the news conference has started in Los Angeles regarding the Menendez brothers. Speaking now is their attorney in the second trial, Mark Garagos.
With one of the boys. That was the ground upon which he prayed. We have those two items. Now, there is a separate track. About 3 months ago, we sent a petition, and mind you, the DA's office, there's been those who have said, well, this is election nearing, blah, blah, blah. We filed this, and the DA has been, Mr. Gascon's office, has been engaged with us productively, strongly, for well over a year. Joan, who you will hear from in about 5 minutes, we actually, because of her young age, she turns 93 next month, we had a very rare thing done back in December, which is called a conditional examination. It's a deposition in a criminal case to preserve her testimony. She was there with her lawyer, Brian Friedman, who represents the family. And what we are also on a parallel track doing is asking, and have been asking, the DA to look at the work they have done and resentence them, to support the resentencing. Now, when I say the work they have done, Lyle and Eric have started, mind you, since 2005, up until the time that Judge Ryan issued the request for an informal reply, have had no hope of ever getting out. Since 2005, they had exhausted all legal remedies. They had resigned themselves to being in prison for the rest of their lives. You could take two tracks on that. You could either just become a hardcore, irreconcilable recidivist, or you could do what they've done, which is create programs, counsel people, develop amazing programs, mentoring people, go to college, get degrees. Lyle, in fact, graduated from the first ever class in June. I watched it, of a combination of UCI along with the Department of Corrections. The first class, Mr. Friedman and I were there, of 22 prisoners who got their BA degree while in prison, and a bunch of them, life without parole. So there is an idea that there is redemption. There is an idea with their green space project of rehabilitation. I will tell you, in over 40 years of doing this, I have never seen the amazing exemplary rehabilitation and mitigation evidence that we have now presented to the DA's office. We're going to hear from the family today briefly, and I will tell you, I'll give you kind of a coming attraction. I will start with Anna Maria. She will tell you exactly the genealogy. We have over 20 relatives, both Kitty and Jose's sides of the family. This is virtually unprecedented in my practice, and I would dare say it anywhere, that 20 family members on both sides, victims, constitutional victims under Marcy's law, are here to urge the DA to resentence. When, after they're speaking, finished speaking to you today, we will then, Mr. Friedman will take them across the street to the Hall of Justice, and they will go through what Gascon does in resentencing, and they will meet with the resentencing unit. They will, under the California Constitution, Marcy's law, they will voice their opinion on why they believe it's time that these gentlemen come home. That they've spent over 35 years, and I've said it once, I've said it twice, if they were the Menendez sisters, they would not be in custody. We have evolved, it's time, and without further ado, I'm going to introduce Anna Maria, who's going to come up and speak.
Good afternoon, everyone. Buenas tardes. My name is Anna Maria Baralt. I am the niece of Jose Menendez. I stand before you today, not just as a member of the Menendez family, but as someone who believes in truth, justice, and healing. Before I get started, I just want to say that I know this is an election season, but for us, this is not a political issue. This is about truth, justice, and healing. On behalf of our whole family, it is my honor to formally introduce our new coalition, Justice for Eric and Lyle. Like so many others, I struggled to process the events of that fateful August day and the loss that I felt. Over time, it became clear that there were two other victims there on that day, my cousins Lyle and Eric. Lyle and Eric would continue to be victimized. They would be victims of a system that wouldn't hear them. And they would be victims of a culture that was not ready to listen. They would be mocked. They would be called cold-blooded killers, left to rot in jail and denied any hope of redemption. If Lyle and Eric's case were heard today, with the understanding we now have about abuse and PTSD, there is no doubt in my mind that their sentencing would have been very different. And yet, despite their circumstances, they have chosen a life of light. Without hope of release, they persevered. They have sought to better themselves and serve as a support and inspirations for survivors all over the world. Their continued incarceration serves no rehabilitative purpose. It's time to recognize the injustice they've suffered and allow them the second chance they deserve. Now here we are, both sides of the family united, sharing a new bond of hope. Hope that with the reexamination of their case, a new outcome will be reached. Hope that this 34-year nightmare will end and that we will be reunited as a family. I am here to ask the District Attorney's Office to take into account the full picture, the truth that was hidden for so long. Lyle and Eric deserve a chance to heal, and our family deserves a chance to heal with them. Please join us. Visit www.justiceforericandlyle.org and sign our petition. And if you'll indulge me, I had two more statements to read. The first is from my mother, 85 years old, Terry Baralt, the sister of Jose Menendez. She can't be with us today.
And there goes the feed.
No.
Oh, here she comes.
85 years old, Terry Baralt, the sister of Jose Menendez. She can't be with us today due to health challenges, but she sent me this. I'm sorry that I can't be there in person to support my nephews, Lyle and Eric. I begin chemo soon, and my doctor says no flights. I need to be strong. I wish to make it clear that I stand firmly with this family. I am Lyle's godmother, and I love them both very, very much. My nephews have spent 3 decades in prison helping others. I have seen great growth in them. Even the law enforcement supervisors and corrections have written letters to the court asking for their resentencing and release. Millions across this country agree. I implore the District Attorney's Office to end our prolonged suffering and release Lyle and Eric back to our family. 35 years is such a long time. My prayer is that I live long enough to see my nephews again and to hug them once more. I have another statement, and this is written by a family member of Marta Cano and Andy Cano, that Andy, the one to whom the letter was written. This is written by one of Marta's children. Thank you for giving our family the opportunity to express our thoughts during this pivotal time in Lyle and Eric's case. Our family's tragedy has always been very public and has been extensively covered by many media platforms. Marta and Andy Cano would have wanted to speak today, but unfortunately, they are both unable to do so. Marta is in memory care, but she spent decades supporting Lyle and Eric. Sadly, we lost Andy shortly before his 30th birthday, and we miss him every day. Both Marta and Andy deeply loved Lyle and Eric. They both believed in justice, but they also believed in a second chances and forgiveness. It has been 35 years since this happened, and we feel enough penance has been paid. It is time for them to be released and for all of us to move on and continue healing as a family. Again, if you want to help, please join us at justiceforlyleanderic.org and sign our petition. With that, I'm going to be followed by several members of the Anderson family. First will be Alan Anderson. He's the nephew of Kitty Menendez.
Okay, that is a news conference outside the courthouse in Los Angeles where the attorney for Kyle and Eric Menendez George Garagos and
Mark Garagos.
Sorry, thank you. And members of the Menendez family have been speaking. More members will continue to speak. I was under the impression that George Gascon, the DA, was going to speak today. That does not seem to be in the cards.
It was reported yesterday that it was the district attorney's office that gathered the family to all come in today for what the family was hoping would be some sort of announcement about the case. The line of the day, though, goes to famed defense attorney Mark Garagos, who says, and I quote, "I've said it for years, if they were the Menendez sisters, it would have been a very different sentence."
And I made that argument yesterday on the program. If this had been...
These were girls, we wouldn't even be talking about it.
...molestation against two daughters, these murders or killings, whatever you want to call them, would have been looked at in a much different light. And their sentences would not have been life in prison without the chance of parole. Somebody writes on the text line, who the hell cares about this? With respect, texter, you're either very young or very dismissive. This is one of the biggest criminal cases in our lifetimes. This captivated the nation in 1989.
During a time where many Americans, mostly men, either didn't want to think about sexual abuse, incest, what that might look like behind the white picket fence in Beverly Hills, or just refused to believe that a father could do that to his sons. And I'll remind everybody, one of the biggest, quote, new pieces of evidence is a letter that was reportedly written by Eric prior to the murders to his cousin saying, "I never know when the abuse is going to happen. It drives me crazy. Every night I stay up thinking my father might come in." That was before the murders and well before a former member of the boy band Menudo came forward saying he too was raped by Jose Menendez while he was a teenager and while Jose Menendez was a record executive.
He claimed he was 14 years old at the time of his molestation. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. Here on Dana and Parks. I'll just be brief about this. To the texter, I said you may be too young to understand the significance of the Menendez brothers' story. He or she writes back, "I wouldn't say what that sentence doesn't make any sense, but I do want to hear why did it captivate the nation? And with respect, I really don't care. It's a California story, but why should I?" He or she does go on to say they're 37, so they might be too young.
Sure.
I just don't get it. Why was this story so important?
Because it happened during a time when we look back that people thought erroneously that just because you lived in a very fancy house in Beverly Hills with a very powerful dad and a
music mogul,
you know, beauty pageant mom, that everything was all rosy and unicorns and rainbows on the inside because the very professional family portraits that they took look great. And it was so difficult for a lot of Americans to understand that when that level of trauma and sex abuse that does go on, it does not know age or gender, Scott. It does not know socioeconomic status. It just doesn't discriminate in that way. People back then could not understand the rage and the trauma that comes from living that life of horror, which those boys lived. It was never a question of whether or not they took a shotgun to mom and dad. They most certainly did. Mm-hmm. But if that trial was held today, we know more now. We are better and more empathetic or sympathetic now when there is a case that involves horrifying abuse. And I'm talking even about, Scott, domestic violence.
Sure.
Is it not a sad commentary on society, though, that if this weren't a massive music mogul in Hollywood and this weren't a Beverly Hills double murder by a rich family, that we wouldn't even know that this story was a thing.
I think it worked against them.
These people would be sitting in their jail cell for the rest of their lives.
I think it worked against them. I think because they were so wealthy, the thought incorrectly was, well, those boys had everything. They went out and bought a Rolex. Like, what could possibly be wrong with all of that money they had? Whereas if this happened to, you know, a low-income family or a middle-class family, maybe back then, in some twisted way, it would be easier for a jury to accept that these things can and do happen.
But I think part of the texter's point is, if this were Jim and Bob Smith from Sedalia, nobody would care.
Well, but I don't agree with that, because Susan Smith was not rich, and she sent her two kids into a lake in South Carolina, and the nation was captivated by that story.
Lorena Bobbitt wasn't rich either.
Severed off her husband's
manhood after years of abuse.
And that became a huge story.
When we look even now at domestic violence cases, Scott, I have long screamed about the cases, and there's one infamous case, God bless her, where a domestic violence survivor fired a warning shot into the ceiling and ended up going to prison for that. She didn't even kill her abuser. She fired a warning shot and ended up going to prison. So we don't always get it right today. Certainly in that case, we didn't. But I think we know a lot more today. And if this were to be tried today, there is no way they go away for 35 years with all of the evidence that that abuse was happening in that home.
And what was the name of the lady? The Devil Is Dancing Tonight.
Casey Anthony.
Casey Anthony. Thank you. Now, I will say this about the Casey Anthony case. This is a mom accused of killing her daughter so she could go out and party.
Same thing with Susan Smith.
Well, true. But with Casey Anthony, I think, and this speaks maybe a little bit to the shallowness of the American viewing public. Part of the reason the Casey Anthony case was so big was because she was so hot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think part of the reason this case was so big and played against those boys, against their favor, was because they were wealthy and they were good looking. And so people looked at them and thought, oh, really?
And they went partying afterwards.
Absolutely, I believe they were abused. Absolutely, I believe it.
Yeah. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. When we get back, why are some fans smiling at the Major League Baseball playoffs? We'll get to that in just a moment here on Dana and Parks.
What are you doing?
What is it you like to talk about?
My patient.
So if you've been watching the NLCS between the Mets and the Dodgers, game two, you may have noticed there were two people in neon yellow outfits behind home plate.
Stop it.
Who were smiling.
Stop it.
With seemingly no interest in the game. Now, there's nothing wrong with smiling at a baseball game, the story goes on, at least when your team is winning. But these fans, however, never stop smiling.
They didn't break the entire game except for once.
The smiling individuals behind home plate are actors promoting Smile 2.
Okay.
A horror movie sequel releasing just in time for Halloween.
Is it out tonight?
Let me see when it comes out.
Yeah.
By the way, they
October 18th.
October 8th. So Friday
night. Friday.
They rented out a third floor hotel room on a busy thoroughfare in Dallas and turned out the lights in the hotel room and lit up their faces and stood there smiling down on the people walking by.
No. I'm going to go with no.
Now that one would get me. There was a foul ball that came in the direction of the two smiling actors at the baseball game. One of them did not break. The other flinched like crazy.
Really?
In the movie, those who are smiling do not flinch ever, not once. Oh, I hate that noise! I hate that noise! I might have to go see this.
What is it?
I think, I don't know, what is it?
I still haven't seen the first one.
Neither have I.
Oh my gosh. It is the scariest movie I have ever seen.
I think I could watch it now, but at the time that it came out, I was...
There is no way.
Yeah, no way.
You make fun of me all the time with that stupid little smile on your face, and you won't even watch it?
No. I don't have to.
Oh, God. There are a couple of scenes.
I saw your reaction.
There are a couple of scenes in that thing. I'm telling you, with the guy, there's a guy in, it's a psych ward, okay? So automatically you're going to be creeped out because it's people just, it's already creepy.
Right.
And then her therapist, there is a scene with her therapist that I, as long as I live, I will not get out of my head.
Well, gee, I can't wait to get to the theater. Based on your review, Dana, with respect, do you think there's a chance that I'm ever... I don't even like scary movies to begin with.
Now, you can watch it for free at home so that you can be scared in the comfort of your own home.
And then not sleep.
That's right. That's right.
No, thank you.
There's a lot of moments where, like, 1 minute there's a person there and then, like the main character turns around to pick up the phone to call for help and then turns back around and there's nobody there.
Oh, the classic anti-jump scare.
Yes. Yes. It's a lot of that. And my son, the baby, will not ever go see a scary movie with me again after that experience. He will.
So he went to smile with
yes,
you?
Yes. He will never go see another scary movie with me again.
Wait, so horror movies, comedies, will he go see any movie with
well,
you?
I won't go see a comedian with you ever again.
I just would scream and jump and then close my eyes and then scream again. And he's like, stop it. Stop it. You are making worse. Stop it.
I believe it.
Sounds like somebody needs to take a trip to Manhattan this weekend to go see Smile 2.
I don't know. I'll text him. Let me text
him
and say,
Friday.
Hey, do you want to see Smile 2 with me? He'll be like, I love you. I'm never going to see a movie with you again.
This news is not too sweet. Coca-Cola is recalling one of its most popular zero sugar drinks, finding that it does, in fact, contain sugar.
Oh.
The company has recalled 13,000 cases of Minute Maid Zero Sugar Lemonade due to mislabeling after discovering that regular lemonade containing sugar was incorrectly packaged in cartons labeled as zero sugar.
Mm-hmm.
This poses a health risk for individuals with certain health conditions, including diabetes, as the drinks contain 40 grams of sugar per 12-ounce can.
Really? Diabetes.
Diabetes.
Think about that. 40 grams of sugar.
Oh, I've made comments before on this
program. In a 12-ounce can.
When are we going to stop drinking soda?
Wow. The recall, by the way, only affects products that were shipped to retail stores in Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. Huh. Well, I'm drinking a Cherry 7-Up right now. It's got 140 calories in it. And 36 grams of sugar.
Yeah. And what's that on your recommended daily intake percentage?
Make that 38 grams of sugar. Wait, hang on, Sam and Dana. It says here, total sugars, 38 grams, including 38 grams of added sugars.
Well, yeah,
what does that mean?
The total is the added, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say on the percentage, though?
It's the hidden happy sugars.
76%
of your daily sugar? There you go.
76% of my daily sugar intake.
You drink two of those and you're at 150% plus whatever sugar you get from your foods.
Well, it has 0 grams of protein. Not getting any muscle mass out of this thing.
Not a good thing.
No protein.
I think I'm going to stop drinking these things. Once you read the label, for a guy with high blood pressure, it has 40 milligrams of sodium.
How does cardiac arrest sound?
Apparently very delightful.
You know what? I had lunch with a friend of mine today right before I popped into work, Scott, and she had a latte about 40 minutes before she met me for lunch. And I walk in, and she's my age. We both went to KU together, known her for, 30, 40 years. Walk in, and she is literally like shaking. And she goes, you are not going to believe this. I got this latte, and I don't think it was like an espresso supercharged. Like, it was just a latte. And she said, I feel like my heart is about to jump out of my chest. And I could tell. She was just, rah, 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 like, just ramped up. And she is a coffee drinker.
Had she not eaten anything
well,
today?
Well, I asked her, I go, my gosh, I go, let's get some carbs in you or something. I don't know. Is it different times of day or is it possible you go to get a coffee and your body is normally used to that in the morning? And because this was the afternoon, like, I don't know. But she said her heart was beating out of her chest, and you could tell, just jittery.
Was she having a panic attack, or was this in relation to the caffeine?
She swears it was in relation to the caffeine.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
But just randomly, if you're used to being a coffee drinker, that can happen to you?
If you don't eat, if you don't have a nice layer of protein, you had mentioned carbs, it's actually protein. If you don't have a nice layer of protein in your stomach while you're consuming coffee, it will hit you aggressively.
Well, but I have 2 to 3 cups of coffee in the morning on an empty stomach. And look at me, I'm fine. I'm the embodiment of health.
You are. Keep telling yourself
okay.
that.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. To both of you. Dana, was there a cat scene in the original Smile?
Involving a young actor from one town of Kansas City.
Really?
There is a cat scene.
Somebody's referencing that on the
Once you see that, you will also never be able to get that scene out of your head.
Does the cat start smiling?
No, Sam, the cat did not smile.
Is it because the cat is dead?
The
Were
cat
there teeth
was
involved?
Violently introduced to the Rainbow Bridge. You would be accurate.
So why would you recommend that Sam and I go watch this movie?
I do love scary movies.
Clever, thriller, scary.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Like, I think, and I don't watch scary movies very often, but when I do, I actually think the Saw movies are clever.
Oh, no, I don't like that at all.
I would agree.
That they're clever?
Want to play a game.
I just think that's gory. That's gory for the sake of gore.
You just said that a cat was sent over the Rainbow Bridge in violent fashion.
In a very
tastefully violent?
I haven't even seen it, and I'm just assuming the cat was eaten.
No. No, you would be wrong.
Oh, really?
Nope. But do you not remember we had the actor on the show, the young actor who was at a birthday party?
Yes.
He's a young actor from Kansas City that got placed in that role that involves a cat that we will not talk about beyond that.
How does that kid sleep at night?
He's an actor.
What'd you say?
Ambien.
Ambien. All right, 913-586-7798. Don't forget to sign up for the Dana and Parks 4th Annual Cornhole Tournament. It is this Saturday at Serve in Overland Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. All the proceeds go to KC Pet Project. We have a limited number of slots for teams. You can register your team today at kmbz.com. Story here from the AP, from our neighbors to the north. The Nebraska Supreme Court ruling today that a top election official had no authority to declare unconstitutional a state law that restored the voting rights of those who have been convicted of a felony, issuing a decision with implications for the upcoming election. In July, Nebraska Secretary of State Bob Evnen ordered county election officials to reject voter registrations of those with felony convictions, citing an opinion from the Attorney General. That opinion, which Evnen had requested, deemed as unconstitutional a law passed this year by the legislature immediately restoring the voting rights of people who have completed the terms of their felony sentences, would have prevented 7,000 or more Nebraska residents from voting in the upcoming election.
What do you think?
I believe that once you've served your sentence, then you should be allowed to vote. Now, I do still agree that if you have committed a violent felony, you should not and cannot be allowed to own a gun.
Well, a lot of people would say if you've committed a violent felony, why are you out?
Well, I mean, battery is a violent felony.
Can be.
I mean, you beat the crap out of somebody in a bar fight or something. I don't think you lose your rights or lose your freedom for the rest of your life, right?
Probably not in all cases.
Yeah.
I'm going to just give you a head scratcher, how dumb are we story, and then I have some gratitude for this town, okay? I don't know if you've seen, the mayor has tweeted about this. It's all over the news today. someone thought it would be a good idea to park their vehicle outside of a Kansas City hotel with 25 firearms inside of it.
Jeez.
A U-Haul truck, if I remember correctly.
Those people also vote, and those guns have been stolen.
Jeez.
They're offering a massive reward.
ATF is involved. The mayor just posted, friendly reminder, please don't leave your one gun or your 25 guns in your car when you are going somewhere. That investigation continues. And then I just want to point out that there is good in Kansas City all around us. You have heard that a motorcycle officer was in a crash, critical condition. The driver stopped. But I do believe that every single bystander that jumped in gave that officer a chance at life. Have you read this, Scott?
No, I haven't.
One of the, you know, anytime there's a motorcycle wreck, that is going to be serious at that speed. And one of the bystanders, I think, used his radio or his walkie-talkie.
Used the officer's radio. Okay.
To say to somebody, hey, send help. Send help. This has just happened. Huh. You know, somebody else like directed traffic around it. Somebody else called 911. Somebody else started chest compressions and CPR.
Good.
And we are.
Is he going to be OK?
Praying for that officer, the officer's family. You know, the number one risk to a police officer's life statistically is the car wreck.
Or in this case, a motorcycle wreck.
Or in this case. But I mean, overall, when we talk about law enforcement, by far, the danger to their lives is everywhere. I'm not saying it's not. But the number one cause of loss of life, I believe, is car crashes, car accidents. Everyone jumped in to help that officer, doing everything
Good
they could.
Them. Good for them.
As fast as they could to get help to him.
From the New York Post, the family of a Tennessee factory worker who was killed during Hurricane Helene is suing the company and its CEO, claiming that the bosses sneaked out of the factory to escape catastrophic weather conditions while they ordered employees to stay in the factory and continue working.
We heard about all the details of this case in real time as the hurricane blew through the area, and that is what was reported at the time, that the bosses left and demanded that if you leave, you will lose your job to the employees.
Johnny Peterson, who is 55 years old, was one of five workers at Impact Plastics who died in flooding that engulfed the factory in the rural town of Irwin on September 27th. According to a lawsuit filed by Peterson's family on Monday of this week in Tennessee State Court, the facility's managers denied employees pleas to leave work as the hurricane bore down on their area. That is despite the fact that workers began receiving notifications from the National Weather Service around 10 in the morning, urging all who could to evacuate to higher ground. At 10:30 in the morning, 30 minutes after those warnings went out, company managers allegedly told employees to move their cars because the parking lot was flooding.
Oh, my gosh.
An hour later, at 11:35, senior management, including Impact Plastics founder and CEO Gerald O'Connor, had stealthily exited the building.
Oh, so the CEO got out.
Mm-hmm.
But the people on the Titanic down below in steerage had to stay.
Court documents claim that Impact Plastics allegedly instructed its employees to continue to work because the company, quote, wanted to meet order deadlines.
Oh, my God.
The CEO and the managers, by the way.
The suit gives a heartbreaking account of Peterson's final moments, including text messages with his family revealing his fear that he would not escape. And warm room in hell waiting for you, CEO.
Yep.
Jeez Louise. Yep.
Coming up, we know the name of the person who has been tapped to flip the switch on the Plaza lights. And as always, it's a name you're going to definitely recognize.
News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in 2 minutes here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.